Good afternoon, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to Season 6, Episode 2 of the Jolly and Josh Show. What a pleasure to have your company. And as always, great pleasure to welcome my baseball brothers, Josh Chetwin, and the producer extraordinaire that is Mr. Eric Jansen. Boys, welcome.
Thank you, Goldie. It's a big day here in the United States. It's Mother's Day. So I've pushed off my Mother's Day festivities so I could hang with you guys before particularly lauding my wife and my mom, Gloria.
Just to clarify, JC, Dave can't join us for the very same reason. So clearly he loves his mother more than you love yours.
Well, there are different time zones. He's 2 hours later. He's right in the center of brunch time. I'm pre-brunch time.
So have you already done some Mother's Day stuff? Have you already showed mom the love?
I took Jen out, my wife, who is the mother of my children. I took her out for dinner last night. And so we celebrated her there, got her flowers already. So that's been done. I spoke to my mom each of the last 2 days. I'm a good boy. You know that.
Come on. So you took Jen out to dinner. So I'm assuming you had some discount vouchers. Because, Jesse, whenever I watched, Two and a Half Men, you always remind me of the non-Charlie Sheen character. I've got visions
of John Cryer. That's very derogatory. Not that I don't like John Cryer. He was great. He's great.
He was awesome. I thought he was absolutely fabulous.
Certainly not cheap when it comes to the family. So. Just cheap when it comes to you, Goldie, because you really don't deserve any love.
Well, it's supposed to be a baseball show. Let's move it on. It's Mother's Day in Canada, so I've already called my mom. Right. From the UK, but it's not Mother's Day here in the UK.
But it's no Mother's Day here, so you can ignore
exactly.
it. Even though
I say, oh, I forgot, okay. But historically, it's Mother's Day in Sweden, but it's not in Portugal or Spain. But apparently, I don't know. Did you do any research on Mother's Day around the world?
Well, it seems to differ, doesn't it?
It does.
All over. It seems to be, depending on what part of the world you're in. I mean, to me, I've always assumed any of these days, Father's Day. Whenever I do the radio show on a Tuesday, as some of our listeners will confirm, I always like to reference what the national day is. And America just throws out national days every day of the year. It's national, let's appreciate the stapler day. I mean, it's just nonsense.
It's because of capitalism. You're just looking for an excuse to make a greeting card that someone will have to buy.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. So absolutely. So no, I mean, obviously the biggest disappointment more for you guys, let alone our listeners, is my complete lack of a biblical reference, which I've been making as a tradition.
You must run out of them by now.
I have run out. And actually, I'm nervous this year because I'm concerned if we do 66 episodes, it's going to be season 6 and the 66th episode, and that is not a biblical reference.
It's a sign of the devil. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know a lot about that, Goldie, I know, from your personal life, the Damien Omen sort of.
Excuse me.
Etched on the back of your neck. We know you're the devil because you're so charming and sweet, but when it comes down to it.
Oh, my Lord. I make a reference to you not loving your mom as much as Dave loves his mom, and this is what I get in response.
Speaking of Mother's Day.
You give and you take.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about Mother's Day. Let's talk about the baseball traditions of Mother's Day. And the one that I particularly like is obviously tipping a hat towards raising awareness for breast cancer. Everybody's dressed in pink. I was watching a game last night and the catcher, I'm trying to remember who it was. Everything, his helmet, everything was pink. It looked amazing, actually, I have to say. And I do love that. I love raising awareness for something as visually striking as that.
And, it's not just a major league tradition now. It's also minor league tradition. When I worked as a sports agent, one of the big days of the whole year was Mother's Day because all the players, as a sports agent, before a player makes major leagues, you actually cover all their equipment costs. And all the players would be like, okay, I need a pink bat. If you had a catcher, they wanted kink gear. It was a very expensive proposition as a representative for a player, but it was so worth it, right? Because it's such a positive voice for a major issue.
Yeah. And obviously the pink bat is the sort of centerpiece of this celebration.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in the gear, I always love, you mentioned it, Goldie, the catcher's gear, the pink catcher's gear was always a really nice touch as well, too.
Well, talking of pink bats, I want to first, before we start the show, I just want to talk a little bit later on in the program about these torpedo bats, which obviously there are pink versions of. And that's going to be just one of the many topics of conversation that we're going to enjoy in the program. Before we do that, though, obviously we always want you to subscribe and get involved and hit buttons at the bottom to help us spread the awareness, spread the love. That's what we're all about. And obviously, this is the Johnny and Josh show. So do give us as big a big up as possible on social media. I know we're only with you probably once a month at best. But you know, hey, at the end of the day, we're all about quality, not quantity, my friend.
Less is more.
Exactly. So, Eric, what about a trivia question before we crack on with the show?
Sure.
Go
Let's
on.
do it. I got a good one actually, and you have to think laterally with this
Okay.
one. This is a fun one. Okay. I discovered it. I got to give other people kudos for coming up with this, but I can't remember their name. So it goes something like this. Okay.
Okay.
Which player has broken up the most no-hitters with a home run? So basically, or who has hit a home run the most times to break up a no-hitter? You see what I did there? Okay, it works both ways. So, would you like options, or do you know, or Johnny, would you?
What's we want options?
Okay,
How on earth am I meant
okay. I
to
thought
know
maybe
this answer?
you could. You can work it out. Like I said, laterally, you know. So. Think outside the box, no pun intended. So it goes, okay, I'll give you choices. Is it A, Mookie Betts? Or is it B, Ricky Henderson? Or is it C, Alfonso Soriano? Or is it D, Ichiro?
Hang on. Why suddenly have we got four options? Normally we only have three. We can just make this even more difficult than it is
I wanted to
normally.
squeeze, an extra added, red herring in there, or is it,
And this. Okay,
see,
so you want a home run hitter that has broken up a perfect game, did you say?
I
No
just,
hitter. A no
I
hitter.
didn't say
Actually,
I didn't say I want a home run hitter. I said which player or those four players has broken
right,
up a
okay.
no hitter the most times with a home
It's
run.
actually okay,
You could
okay,
actually say a perfect
okay,
game, but. or even a perfect game. Yes.
okay,
So yeah, so okay. So think is
okay.
that's another, yeah.
I
So
thought I
it's a great question.
okay.
If
It's
when you think about it
yes.
laterally, you go, oh, okay, I see what you did there, Eric. Okay. But there you go. So is it Mookie Betts, Ricky Henderson, Alfonso Soriano, or Ichiro? Answer later on in the show.
Okay, first batter, lead-off batter, guys. Since obviously we are a monthly show rather than a weekly one, we're not going to bother with the news roundup. We're just going to discuss issues that are clearly topics of conversation in recent weeks, particularly ones that are of more recent weeks. And we're going to start off with, we're what, 6 weeks into the season? So that's roughly about 40 games at 162. We're going to talk about those torpedo bats that I referenced at the top of the show. Now, everybody relates these, JC, to the Yankees because they used them in their opening series against Milwaukee and they were smashing home runs everywhere. And everybody thought, oh my God, these bats. Just to remind everybody, what is the difference physically between a torpedo bat and a traditional bat?
Well, it changes the circumference of the bat in the sweet spot where you normally hit
Right.
it. So it thickens that piece and thins out other parts of the bat, particularly at the top near the nose of the bat,
Okay.
to give that torpedo look, supposedly creating more of a power effect if you make a solid contact. I've never swung one. Obviously, my baseball days are over. Initially, the Yankees came out guns a-blazing with them, hit a bunch of home runs in the game. Everyone thought, oh, this is chicanery. We're in a moment of great change and cheating in baseball. We're always so worried. We grip our hands about cheating in baseball, and there was people who said, oh, we need to outlaw them. But as the season's gone on, we've seen that it doesn't necessarily add much. Certain players will use it. A couple of switch hitters will use it in one hand, but not the other side of the plate.
Yeah.
You've seen the players who did so well to start with. They've gotten relatively normal in terms of their statistics. I'm a big fan of being very careful about equipment and technology. As you guys know, I play curling. There was a huge thing called Broomgate where they changed the surface of the broom that you sweep and really affected the game. So pay careful attention to it. But I think this is Much Ado About Nothing, and the torpedo bat is not necessarily that type of change that we should be concerned about.
So yeah, drawing a parallel to other sports, guys. I mean, golf is constantly looking for innovations when it comes to the club itself, and you know, modern day drivers hit the ball significantly further, even though obviously players are stronger and fitter and et cetera, which has obviously contributed. But there's no question that they don't seem to have a problem with constant advancements technologically to advance the game. Should baseball have the same attitude,
Well,
or?
but they put limitations on even that, right? I mean, at the PGA level, you can only have so much that, and this is true with Formula One is a huge example of this, which is you could create cars well faster, but they put limitations there as well too. It's finding that sweet spot, right, between creating the greatest opportunity to be the best and most exciting sport, but not overdoing it to the point where the technology overrides the human skill.
Now, this is a point, boys. I said at the top of this segment that this bat's been associated with the Yankees because of that opening series. But I think I'm right in saying that the very first one, because this is a Louisville slugger, was actually handcrafted for our dear friend De La Cruz, the Cincinnati Red shortstop. He actually had the first ever torpedo bat, which he used for the first time on March the 31st against the Texas Rangers. And the fact that he went 4 for 5 and hit 2 home runs probably didn't do the bat's reputation too much harm. And apparently that was why the Yankees, they had made inquiries and wanted to get involved as well. Interestingly, you'll all remember his season last season. He came out the blocks in April, was the player of Major League Baseball, and then as a hitter, he started to cool off. So, you know, the fact that he had an amazing opening night is not that out of the ordinary. Plus, I would add, JC, your view on this. The Yankees are the ones associated with the torpedo bat the most, and yet the one player who's not using it, Aaron
Aaron
Judge,
Judge, yeah.
best hitter in the game.
And I'd make one other point that even if it were a mild competitive advantage, we are playing in an era where pitchers are completely dominant over hitters. So if you want to try and level the playing field a little bit, and we've seen this with pitchers previously, 1968, the mound was lower because pitchers were getting the greater advantage against hitters. So even if it were somehow a difference maker, I'm actually okay with it because I'd like to see the offense kind of level up a little bit against the pitching.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, let's now
You'll.
talk about the divine intervention.
But wait,
Sorry.
hang on. Thanks for asking me. It was bringing me in the conversation.
Yeah.
No,
Eric
literally,
needs a hug.
because you know, basically, you know, we could say, you know, is it a form of cheating or is it innovative? You know, but the thing is, in ice hockey, the NHL in the early 90s, you know, they started introducing composite, you know, carbon sticks. And nowadays, no one uses any wooden sticks anymore in ice hockey internationally and in the NHL. And so it is one of the things that kind of evolves. So will we see the torpedo bat sort of being used by everybody? I mean, it's
Hey,
I
but at the
can't
end of the day,
compare it, but
guys, it's not like. But at the end of the day, it's not like any of this technology is limited to one team, so they get an unfair advantage. If it's better than the traditional bat, everybody can go out and buy the damn things. So I don't see that
yeah.
it's an issue. And if it enhances the game, boys, happy days. They hit a few more home
Yeah,
runs, happy days.
there you go. Yeah.
Okay. Right, let's move it on. I want to talk White Sox. I want to talk divine intervention. This is an extraordinary story. So, as we know, we have a new pontiff, Robert Francis Prevost. Is that how you pronounce it, JC? Prevost.
Sounds good to
Okay,
me.
sounds
Yeah,
good.
or both.
First American in history to lead the Catholic Church, elected last Thursday at the Vatican to be the new pope. And he's taken the, and this I never get my head around, is his name is Robert Francis, but he's Pope Leo the 14th. I mean, I've never understood this guy. I mean, if I was pope, if I was made pope and I'm allowed to, I'd like be Pope Clint Eastwood the first. I mean, it's a bit, why? Does anybody understand why they have to
This,
have a completely different name?
I love your respect for religion and tradition, Goldie.
Yes.
No, I mean, it's because it's representing someone in history who you want to emulate. So Pope Francis was a good example. He was part of the
Clint
Franciscan.
Eastwood. What's wrong with
What,
that?
like guns blazing Pope? I mean, come on, man. Like,
Make
we live in a different
my
era.
day. Again, I thought this was a baseball show.
Okay. Sorry,
It's a
guys. Okay.
cultural show
But
with a touch of baseball.
this is a great story. I mean, how has somebody found footage from the 2005 World Series that is absolute divine proof that the man is a White Sox fan? By the way, the Cubs tried to claim he was a Chicago Cubs fan, but they've now got the proof, and his brother, John Provis, has confirmed, no, definitively, he's a White Sox fan.
Yeah, it's a great story. You gotta love, there was a belief that an American would never be named Pope because of the power that America has on the geopolitical stage, and they felt that it would counterbalance with someone from somewhere else. But of course, Pope Leo XIV spent a lot of time in Peru. But I love this baseball story. And it's not the first Pope baseball story. I recently wrote a chapter for an upcoming book on Stan Musial. And did you know that Stan Musial, whose family was from Poland, was really good friends with Pope John Paul II? Even before he was Pope, Musial traveled to Poland and understood that Pope John Paul, I forget his Polish name, he was a cardinal in Poland, was very anti-communist and he wanted to meet him. So they met, they were fast friends. Musial didn't speak very good Polish, and Pope John Paul did not speak very good English, but they became friends. And over the course of both their lives, often would get together, they would write, they would correspond. So the greatest cardinal of all time, Stan Musial, met one of the greatest cardinals who became a pope of all time, John Paul II.
I love it. And obviously, it's the inevitable add-ons when this story broke is, might just be the blessing the White Sox need. They need some divine intervention, particularly off the back of last season, when they achieved what is basically in the modern era the worst record ever, 41 wins, 121 losses. Now, before we start discussing whether or not this season's Colorado Rockies are actually going to threaten that record, let's get a view from our man across the pond, Mr. David Lengel, about what's happening in Colorado.
I'm supposed to talk about the Colorado Rockies because they suck. And the record, it seems like now, is this what we're going to happen and have in Major League Baseball now? Every year there's a team that flirts with 120 losses. And, Eric was telling me that, the record for most losses for the 62 Mets is still the Mets because the Mets lost 120 games and the White Sox lost 121 games. And the Mets have a slightly better winning percentage. Nobody cares about winning percentage. We lost that record. That was our record. It was close to our hearts. But never mind that. I want to talk about the Rockies for a second. Why do the Rockies suck every year? This is a question for Josh, obviously. He lives in Denver. But it's not like Denver is some small market place. It's got a very healthy population. There's 700,000 there in the city and more in the metropolitan area. They have Jokic there. You'd think you'd stumble into a few more wins just by having that guy in your city. Some kind of halo effect. They win Super Bowls. They have a beautiful stadium. They draw pretty well for a team that sucks all the time. I just don't understand. They're going to win 27 games this year? Nobody wants to hear about fantasy, but I picked up a guy last night just because they were playing the Rockies and he pitched a complete game shutout against them, which was great for me. I think they lost 21-0. What, like, that's not Major League Baseball. When are they going to fix this? This is a franchise that should be really good. It's all there. I understand they play a mile high and the ball goes all over the place, but you figure they'd stumble. They used to stumble into a winning season every now and then, but now it's just like going nowhere. And, again, Josh can answer why. I just don't get it. They seem to be in a much better place than places like Pittsburgh. So, yeah, I don't get the Rockies. They need to figure it out.
Okay, so there he is, big Davey Lengel, as normal, not sitting on the fence. He's asked the question, JC, what's the vibe? You're in Denver. What's the vibe in that part of the world, having the worst baseball team by a proverbial mile? Just
Well,
stinking the place up.
it's crazy. People don't think of Denver necessarily as a sports town in the way you think of like Boston, Philly, New York, but it very much is, right? David mentioned how the Broncos had won Super Bowls, the Nuggets in basketball, the Avalanche in hockey, they've all won championships. And this is a critical mass of so many factors that have led to the Rockies being this bad. First and foremost, at the top of the mountain by far is ownership. The Montfort family do not invest in this team. They not great baseball people. They have been lucky in the past at times, but they really aren't doing anything that's right. That's one. The second one, and I always think of the Blue Jays, you know, every offseason they're trying to go out and get players, and they have this huge handicap, right? The handicap of being in Canada. There's certain financial factors that make it a little more difficult to go out and lure free agents. Well, the Rockies have a similar handicap when it comes to going out and getting free agent pitching. Because no, if I were a pitcher of any ability, there's no way I want to pitch in Colorado. Because, and it's not just the altitude, it's also the stadium. It's a very big stadium. There are a lot of gaps. So you're giving up home runs, you're giving up doubles. It's a terrible place to play. They've overspent in the past. The Mike Hampton example is the biggest one. Danny Nagel. And they've had failures on that front. So pitching is always going to be an issue there. But they have made it to the World Series in the past. And I think the third part is player development. When you look at the rankings for teams in terms of where their pipeline is in the minors, the Rockies were ranked 18th, which is not terrible. But that's also a reflection of the fact that you have the players in the pipeline, you're about average, but they're not doing a great job of developing them necessarily because you haven't seen the real breakthroughs. And even when they've gone to the free agent market, Chris Bryant was a big free agent splash, absolutely failed on that. Let Trevor Story go, who, you know, maybe that was a good decision because he got injured quite a bit, but every factor that you look at for the Rockies, they have failed, and they're clearly not going to do anything to try and improve, because what's the point? They're not going to be competitive, so you might as well go down in the blaze of ignominy.
Can I pick up on one of your earlier points? Because, I mean, owner Dick Monfort, you said that, you know, they're not really trying, and yet their payroll is mid-table. It's not like they stink the place out and they're spending no money at all. So is it more that they do spend a bit of money, but they just don't spend it particularly well?
I think that's definitely true. They don't spend it particularly well. I just think in general, they're just not great baseball people. You know, they don't really get it. They don't surround themselves with good baseball people. They struggle. They struggle from, you know, a identification standpoint. And the reason that they're mid-table in terms of their salaries has a lot to do with the Chris Bryant acquisition, where they spent huge money on Bryant, and he has been an absolute dud because of injuries primarily. But
Eric, as we record, these are the numbers for the Rockies. Okay, 6-33, 6 wins, 33 losses. So that's a 154 winning percentage, which is horrible. They've lost their last 8 consecutive games. Their run differential is -134. You won't be surprised to know that's miles the worst record. And their away record absolutely stinks. 2-17 in 19 games. They've only managed 2 games. Now, you are a man who is completely and utterly unspoiled by failure. So what would you be saying to that team when you're faced with those sort of numbers?
Well, here's the thing. Now, unlike other sports, and correct me if I'm wrong, Josh, but like when you get first pick in the NFL, you get first pick in the NHL, it's a big deal. It's televised. Everyone's like, oh my God, they're going to go for this player. Getting first pick in baseball, and let's face it, it looks like the Rockies are going to get first pick, or at least consider first pick for next year's draft. It doesn't always pan out well, does it?
Yeah, I mean, and they've gotten some good players. Dollander, a pitcher who's pitched in the major leagues a little bit, they have some players. That's the reason they're 18th, is because when you draft that high. But you're right. I mean, development is such a huge part of baseball, and that impacts things. We should also mention that the night before we recorded this podcast, the Rockies lost to the Padres 21-0. I know David referenced that as well, too. And there are two parts of that that are so mystifying. One, giving up 21 runs is absolutely shocking. Two, you know, we talk about how bad a pitching environment Colorado is, and they got shut out. They got shut out at Coors Field. I mean, this team is It's just shocking. You know, if I'm the Montfort family, I would be so embarrassed by this. I would be going out to try and at least get a few players to make yourself more competitive. Because the whole thing about baseball always has been even the worst teams win, you know, a third of their games. If you can't do that and then you're that far below, it is, you know,
What's the
what's the
point?
point?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is the franchise in danger of being lost and being moved elsewhere?
No, because again, it's a great sports town. People still go out to games. If I think if you probably look at attendance, it's down, no doubt. But I think if you compare them to other teams that have been this bad, I bet it's slightly better because people,
Okay.
it's right, the stadium's right downtown. People love to go to games and they enjoy the environment.
But did you see the Kyle Freeland press conference? I mean, the guy was almost in tears. He was so
Well,
embarrassed.
Freeland's a Colorado guy through and through. He's from Colorado. He's played there his whole career. He's been through the ups and downs. I don't blame him. I, you know, it must be so frustrating to be. I've been on some bad teams in my life, but like of this level, of historic level, the pressure starts to mount as the season continues, and it makes it all the more difficult to be able to get those wins.
So yeah, basically in conclusion, we've seen the 62 Mets being notoriously the worst team in baseball in the modern era. And now in back-to-back seasons, we're going to see that record broken twice. Time will tell. Moving on.
Right, let's move it on. Badu Watch, A View to Akil. I can't believe we're still doing this. I've no idea. Is he still playing baseball? I heard he'd got he got a gig at Hooters. Is that not right?
Oh, be nice. No, basically, last time we did this show, I reported that unfortunately he had a broken hand in he got a broken hand in spring training, a fractured bone, and had to get an operation, and got sent down to Toledo. He's off the 40-man roster of Detroit Tigers, and we love Akil Badu. We've been following him over the past few seasons on this show, and we how can we you know even though he's down with the Toledo Mudhens, the AAA affiliate for the Detroit Tigers. Let's hear it for the boy. The good news is that broken hand that he and an operation that he had afterwards did some good. He's actually kicking ass in Toledo. He's in 19 games. He's already got five home runs, four stolen bases, 19 runs. Come on, he's clawing his way back up.
Right. So I had come up with an alternative. I spent the time, I did the work that you boys don't
Okay.
do
All
to
right.
come up with someone. And it was a great story. Plus, he had the type of name where we would have had like a view to Akil.
A nice pun.
Unfortunately, he got set down. But I'll tell you who he is just very briefly. His name is Craig Yoho. So it would have been the Yoho down low, which would have totally worked. And he's a relief pitcher in the Brewers organization. And he has a great story in that he was a positional player, went to Indiana University, was a positional player, had gotten like 10 at bats. He played even less than I played in college. And COVID came and he's like, I got to figure out a way to like jumpstart my baseball career. So he taught himself during COVID a changeup, which is arguably, apparently, the best changeup in all of baseball. And he got drafted in the eighth round and shot up the Brewers system, made it to the major leagues. Unfortunately, he had some hiccups when he made it to the big leagues. He gave up had a 5-run game recently and just got sent down. But if Craig Yoho makes it back with his awesome changeup, I think we move to the Yoho down low.
Yo, down low, and you get
I'm
traded.
loving that because there's all sorts of other options. If he has a bad day, yo ho, go slow. I mean, there's a
It's the
lot of
Yoho
little
yo-yo.
yo-yo.
Yo ho and a
It's
bottle
a
of
great
rum.
name.
Yeah. Got options. So we just need to make it back to the bigs.
I'll go for yo ho and a bottle of
Okay.
rum. All
Okay.
right.
Well, rewinding, fantastic news about Akil. I may have been taking the mick early doors, but I'm a big fan. I love that footage from a few seasons back, which is why we adopted him as our brother when he hit a home run in his debut and his family went crazy. I thought it was awesome. So great news to hear he's rediscovering his swing. Right, let's move it on. Okay, up next, we have Our first manager of the season, unbelievable when you consider we're only a matter of, what is it, 6 weeks into the season. The All-Star break still a way away, and yet already a few whispers about which other managers will be getting their marching orders. As you know, on Thursday, guys, Pittsburgh's Derek Shelton was the first to receive his P45. The big question, who is next? Well, let's find out what the man across the pond, Big Davey Lingell, thinks on that issue first.
Who is the next manager to be fired? Well, let's go back to what I was talking about earlier. Why does Bud Black just sit there year after year and lose, you know, all these games? It's not like he had some incredible amount of success in San Diego. The guy has an under 500 record in San Diego. He comes over to Colorado. He has a couple of good seasons to start, and now he's sitting there. He's going to lose the 145 games or something. They're going to win like 27 games. How does this guy still have a job? That's what I want to know.
Okay, so Dave's gone for the obvious one. Not exactly too many surprises there. Some other names out there, JC. Brandon Hyde, the Orioles have had a horror start when you consider the expectations and how good they were last season. Rocco Baldelli from the Twins.
And who are you picking?
Been struggling, but I heard some whispers that Ron Washington with the Angels was on. And I'm sorry, that man walks on water. I will not hear anything negative said about Ron Washington. I've got to say, for me, guys, you said how tough it is to have a franchise north of the border up in Canada. I accept that the challenges are unique to the Toronto Blue Jays. But when I look at their lineup, I every season, I'm so disappointed where they finish up. So is John Schneider maybe the name that's on the block?
Yes, when I put out the list,
I mean, that's the one that people are because that's the one that in the news most people are talking about. I mean, that's there. Apparently, the Blue Jays are going to make a decision on him, so that's been publicly stated. But I think that you make a point, Johnny, which is that the reason Bud Black isn't my first choice is because there has to be a divide between expectation and performance, right? The Rockies weren't expected to do well. They're doing worse than even expectation, but a team like the Blue Jays or Brandon Hyde at the Orioles, those would make the most sense to me because those are teams that had high expectations coming in this year, particularly the Orioles, right? With Brandon Hyde. So, you know, Adley Rushman is doing so poorly that, you know, you start to wonder, okay, are they getting the most out of their players? So I'd go with Hyder Schneider.
What about you, Eric?
Schneider's my view. That's the thing about Schneider is, you look at that stacked lineup, they should not be, but at the time of recording, the Toronto Blue Jays are one game below 500. Luckily, they're not, you know, it is too early. They're not, you know, 20 games, you know, behind first place at the moment. So there is time to regroup. And who knows? Are we reaching the point now that if you are going to fire a manager, now is the time? Or do you wait till after the All-Star break? It's, you know, do or die now.
If I could pick up, guys, on your thoughts on Brandon Hyde with the Orioles, I mean, do you take into account the luck factor? Because obviously they had their opening day starter, Grayson Rodriguez. He went down with a soldier injury. Zach Elfin, who I've got two of my fancy teams, he was fantastic first three starts. And then he's been out for well over a month. He's back, actually. I think he's back on the mound tonight. So he is finally back. I mean, that's a big loss. They're literally your number one and your number two.
But Sugano's pitched quite well for them. So, you know, that injuries are part and parcel to baseball now, that you have to have a certain expectation that you need depth because you're going to have those levels of injuries. I always find the manager the most interesting aspect of baseball because in a sport that is driven by analytics, it is the one role that they haven't figured out a simple way to determine performance. In a way that every other aspect of baseball, we've come up with WAR and OPS plus and on-field performance. It is incredibly hard to determine whether the performance of a player is directly correlated to the performance of the manager or whether there are other factors. And that means that it's always going to be a feel thing for ownership. Has the manager lost the clubhouse in terms of motivation? Is the manager making the wrong calls that are leading to injuries? These are very they're not quantitative, they're qualitative, and it's hard to determine.
And you believe that it's more than just numbers in a win and loss column?
100%. Yeah. And I think we've seen that, right? I mean, look at the Mets last year. First half of the season, we would have been discussing in the same sort of way about whether there should have been a change managerially because of the win-loss. But Steve Cohen had a different perspective because he was inside of it, stuck with it, and we know the Mets end up having a great season. So I think that it's not as simple as the numbers.
And a great start to this season. I mean, one of the great starts.
And here's one for you. Like, who wish managers out there? Like, lately, let's say, for example, the Blue Jays fire Schneider or Baltimore looking for a new manager. Who's out there that you think, oh, he'd be a perfect fit?
Yeah.
Joe Maddon? Is it Buck Showalter? Does he have a few years left in his lifeline? Who knows?
Bobby Cox.
Yeah, but we've seen a big change in the way managers are chosen, and it's very different from the sports now, where in the past it was that, you know, former managers are the first people you look at, former players who played big leagues. Now they look a lot more within the organization. Who knows these players, particularly the core, like as the Phillies, they come up? And we've seen that with a number of teams. So we don't have these big name managers as often as we used to. Sometimes we're looking for a person who understands the organization in a more holistic way.
True.
And the mere fact that you don't have managers with really long, with great longevity with one particular club, it's hard to imagine. It's hard to think of a manager that sort of gets that culture of that club, just simply because they haven't had the years from which to create it, which to build it. Doesn't seem to be the norm anymore. Whereas, you know, I remember thinking back in the day when we were doing the show, there were certain teams that you just seem, you know, Bobby Cox being the obvious version, that he'd been with the Braves since you know, the beginning of time.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Roberts has kind of now become the dean, right? Yeah. But when your team is that good, and even with Doc Roberts, there were talks when the Dodgers weren't winning World Series, even though they were winning 100 games, that, oh, we need to fire him. I mean, people are never satisfied.
Exactly.
And I go back to the Mets, that I have a lot of respect for Steve Cohen for not pulling the trigger prematurely.
And who would have thought that right now Kevin Cash is the longest serving manager at the moment for the Tampa Bay Rays?
Is that right?
Yeah, and then second to and the second is Dave Roberts.
Or 15. Wow!
Yeah,
wow! I did not know that. So, okay, great stuff, guys. Right, let's move it on. Let's hit that bell. We're into the seventh inning stretch. This is obviously completely being lost to anybody that's listening to the podcast and not watching it on YouTube. You can, of course, watch it on YouTube. You can subscribe, which would be lovely. And you get a chance to just see how badly all three of us have aged, let alone what we're wearing. So feel a lot better about yourself. So make sure you get a visual input as well as an audio one. Right. Baseball book of the week. This is very much Eric's segment. Eric, what have you got for us this week, big guy?
Well, since this week we were commemorating VE Day, the anniversary of VE Day, all right, and I thought this tied in nicely because there was a book that I did purchase a while ago, and I said, oh yeah, this will be very timely to read it for this episode, and it's called The Victory Season by Robert Weintraub, and so The Victory Season basically chronicles the 1946 baseball season, when things were starting to get back to normal, when players were coming back from fighting in World War II, such as Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Stan Musial. It's also the year that Jackie Robinson started breaking into the color barrier. It really was a turning point for what the baseball sort of turning the page into a new chapter, to a new era, as well as just addressing what, you know, the healing process of post-war, not just America, but Canada as well, because in the book as well, it chronicles a player called Phil Marchilden, and a Canadian pitcher who was, you know, who was playing with the Philadelphia Athletics at the time, went off to fight the war with the Royal Canadian Air Force and a Halifax bomber, and then he got shot down. He was in a POW camp, came back with PTSD, and baseball was his healing process of dealing with the horrors of war, and under the tutelage of Connie Mack, of the notorious manager of the Philadelphia Athletics, was able to get back into normality in society. So my recommendation is the victory season as on your baseball bookshelf.
Can I throw a
Fantastic.
quick addendum to that because of
Yes.
the subject matter? Because we should mention a British connection to that kind of book, which is Gary Bedingfield, who played for the Enfield Spartans in the UK for many years, played for GB's national team before my time for a period. He wrote a book called Baseball in World War II Europe, and it is chocked with amazing pictures, discusses the interaction between baseball and Europe during World War II, not just British players, but soldiers. He's quite an expert on that, but has a tremendous connection to British baseball. So check out that book as well, too.
Fantastic. So
It's
there you
very
go, the
timely.
recommendation.
That's very good because actually in the book as well, they talk about how Canadians and Americans would play baseball with each other in here in Great Britain and then go back to play Major League Baseball. So there's your book.
Fantastic. Okay, so put that on your book list, The Victory Season and Baseball World War II Europe, as recommended by the boys. Right. What's our other cultural reference this week from the world of baseball, Eric?
We're going back to that turntable, Johnny, and to vinyl and to
Oh,
your
God.
favorite song. And I know I've tormented you many years with this song, only because it is Jane Morgan's 101st birthday this week. And she's
Wow.
still with us,
Oh, wow.
and I don't know why you're so mean to her because I li actually like this song. And for those who are new to the show, Johnny doesn't like this song.
With that, he put his two lips so close to mine and talked of baseball, baseball, the Dodgers and baseball, baseball, Stan Musial and baseball, baseball, all through the night, baseball, baseball. I was so mad, I got to thinking, surely this lad will start me drinking, for there was me, eager and healthy, in love with a he. Handsome and wealthy, I tried to get him in my sweet embrace. All he had on his mind was the pen and trace. And though I saw him practically every night, we never went to movies or saw a fight. We just saw baseball, baseball, DiMaggio and baseball, baseball,
Okay, so there you go. That
Chicago
was a song
Cubs,
by Jane Morgan
baseball,
celebrating her
baseball,
101st
DeRozier and
birthday. Many,
baseball,
many happy returns to Jane. You're an
baseball.
absolute legend. I still hate the
Now
song, but I'm
aren't
going to
you
pretend I like it
stuck?
because it's your
It's
birthday.
like Doris Day meets
So
Billie
happy birthday, Jane.
Oh, I know.
Retaliation,
Wait, you
yeah, Johnny.
I don't know why, guys. Baseball songs and me just don't mix. I don't know whether I've just been t scarred by all those national anthem renditions, some of the worst things I've ever heard in my
Okay, so
life,
you know
when we
what?
used to cover the sh
You know what? It's like all those FA Cup songs that used to come out every year, which you don't do anymore here in the UK.
No.
That there used to be a thing that the teams that go to the FA Cup final, they come out with a song, and the team would sing a song, those were. I'm sorry, give me Jane Morgan any day.
Well,
Yeah,
I
better
and
production
which
value.
was your favorite of those FA Cup songs? I think Ozzie Ardiles and the was it 1981 Spurs FA Cup song
With
was
Chaz and Dave.
priceless. Yeah.
So well,
Tottenham. Do you remember Ozzie say, trying to say Tottenham?
yes,
Tottenham.
that big
Such
cup.
a nice man. Such a nice man. I've met him many times, boys. I can confirm Ozzie Ardiles is one of the most charming men you could ever want to meet. Absolute delight. But you're absolutely right. It was almost that tradition of FA Cup songs, which I'm sure you've heard a few of them, JC. They're so bad that they're good. Should we take the same attitude to baseball songs?
Yes, because novelty songs, by definition, are always going to be kitschy. That's
Yeah.
there's a Super Bowl
Good
shuffle
point.
with the Bears. That's part of their charm.
But I
Though
like to
some of
think.
those baseball songs that we've had have been excellent in their own right.
Yeah. So suck it, Johnny.
Name me one.
Jolton Joe
Joe
DiMaggio. I heard
DiMaggio.
that's a
Yeah. Actually, I did
I
like
like
that
that
one.
one.
No. That's pretty much the only one I have liked. So I'm passing the pink torpedo bat baton to JC because it is time for Josh's House of Cards.
All right, fellas, you're getting bonus this week because I wanted to do a week where I talked about the three greatest sets. They're considered the grail baseball card sets of the sport, one of which I've already talked about, and
It's
that
not a sport. Yes, it's not a sport. Okay.
baseball's not a sport.
Sorry, I thought you were referring to baseball card collecting as a sport. I
No.
apologize.
These are the most popular cards of the sport.
Oh,
The
of the sport
cards.
of baseball. Sorry,
Yeah.
I apologize. Right.
Just keep up, Gouldy. I know we're moving in a
I
circular
just thought,
motion.
oh my
We're
God, what
gonna
a
end up with a
sado. He
point.
thinks
Yes.
collecting cards,
Torpedo
good
bats.
Lord.
Yeah. Seriously, where's the waffle? So the first of the three Grail sets that I'm talking about is one that we've talked about before. I will show the card for people who are looking. This is a famous 1933 Gaudi set. I'm sure Eric will know I'm not going to talk much about two of the players, but make a quick trivia reference. This is Bill Terry, and you know why Bill Terry is so famous?
Go on.
Do you not? You don't know. I'm
Oh,
surprised. He is the last National League player to hit 400. So
that's right.
the
Oh, wow.
last National League player was Bill Terry, New York Giants. So that's his card right there. You can see how cool the design is. The reason it's considered a Grail set is that it was the first set to have bubble gum in it. So it was kind of that movement towards kind of cards that we know today, where you had the stick of bubble gum. We don't do that anymore, baseball cards, but it was the first one, 1933. It's probably my second favorite personal set. So that's that one. The next set, and you guys know that I generally focus on pre-war sets. This is the one post-war set that is considered one of the three Grail sets. This is the 1952 Topps set. Right here, the 1952 Topps set. The player that I have here is a fellow by the name of Johnny Berardino. Eric, do you know why Johnny Berardino is a very relevant and important figure in baseball history?
I do not know, and I hope you tell me.
Okay, well, he dropped one of the R's in his name, and he is the person who has the greatest combination, Gould, you'll like this, of an acting career and a baseball career. He is number one of a combination. I know, Eric, you'll say, oh, Chuck Connors, he was, the Rifleman. Baseball career was very short. Johnny Berardino had a really solid baseball career, won a World Series in 1948, and would go on to star in what America's probably greatest soap opera, General Hospital, from
Oh,
1963 to 1996.
no
He's the only
way.
player to have won a World Series and also have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. He was a three-time nominee for an Emmy. Apparently, in between shoots, when he was on General Hospital, he loved to play catch. And so, interesting guy. So that's the 1952 set. The reason this set is so famous is this is the consideration of the modern baseball card set. It was the first cards to have statistics on the back, which is a huge part of baseball cards nowadays. It was one of Topps' first sets, and the 1952 Mickey Mantle is considered one of the two greatest baseball cards, that along with the T206 Honus Wagner, which we talked about before. All this leads me to the third set, which is the T206 set. Here it is an example of that card. This was put out by America Tobacco Company, and they had all different types of brands on the back. This was the Piedmont brand. Sweet Caporal was the other sort of most common, but they had about a half a dozen other backs for these. People collect different backs for them. And the player who I have here, who I'm going to really talk about, is a guy named Dode Chris. Dode Chris was this guy's name. These cards are also great because they have a really beautiful design, really nice artwork. You see here the yellow and the green in the back and the action shot, really cool. So, do either of you guys know? I probably know the answer is no, who Dode Chris is and why he is also a really important, relevant player to baseball history.
I'm going to have to put my hand up and say, I don't know.
Okay, thank you, Goldie. Dode Chris was the first regular pinch hitter in Major League Baseball history, the first player ever to have as many as 40 plate appearances in a season as a pinch hitter. He did it 4 straight years and was really the start of the pinch hitting era of baseball. There have been other people who have done it first. Mickey Welch was the first one ever to do it, but he was the first one to really have success at it. In fact, in his first year of doing this in 1908, he hit around, I think it was 340, something like that, 341. And he had the best batting average in baseball. And he played for the St. Louis Browns. And there was a huge uproar amongst Browns fans that he should have won the batting title. Now, he only had 91 plate appearances that year. They gave it to Ty Cobb, who had hit about 320. But there were people who believed it didn't matter how many at bats you had, as long as you had the highest average. His career only lasted four seasons. He was actually a dime store version of Shohei Ohtani because he was a pretty good pitcher. Didn't pitch well in the majors, but when he left the majors, threw four no-hitters in the Texas League. So he had success outside of it. But I bring him up primarily to ask a question that I have often asked. We have a place in the Hall of Fame for the greatest closers of baseball, which are effectively pinch pitchers. Why is it that we do not look at the handful of greatest pinch hitters, which I can tell you as a person who pinch hit quite a lot in my career, is a very difficult position to be in. At least as a pitcher, relief pitcher, you're going to get multiple times to throw to hitters. Pitch hitter, you got a very short window to have success. And to me, in my Mount Rushmore of pinch hitters, you've got Lenny Harris, you have Smokey Burgess, you probably have a guy like Gates Brown.
Rusty Staub.
You know, there are Rusty Staub probably in the level right below these guys. Manny Mota would probably be up there for probably my fourth guy. But these guys are obviously not considered because, you know, I understand a few of it, which is that, you know, you get 40, 50 at-bats in a season. You don't always have it in high-leverage situations. Smokey Burgess had the record for the highest whim probability change when he came up to bat as a pinch hitter. That makes a difference. So I'm arguing, yeah, you're not going to put a lot of pinch hitters in the Hall of Fame, but perhaps you need to look at this group. Not that he would be a Hall of Famer, but it really started with this guy, Dode Chris, that this is a part of baseball that does not get credit that it deserves.
Jesse, before we close the show up, I am fascinated by this because obviously, given the world I work in charity auctions, what's the sort of money that the ultimate baseball card could raise in an auction?
Yeah, it's around $8 million. That's the T206. Really? Yeah, the T206, yeah. Honus Wagner. I believe the 52, there's a 52 Topps Mickey Mantle that is in that range as well, too. I can't remember. They're all sort of in that, you know, 8 to 10 million. They continue to rise, though. There's never been an example of a bad investment for those high-end cards where the value has not risen because of scarcity. The Honus Wagner card is so famous because Honus Wagner was not a smoker. He hated cigarettes. These cards were in tobacco packs. And he, when he found out the card had existed, said, "You need to take me out of all these packs. I don't want to be associated with smoking."
Right.
So most of those cards disappeared. So there are only a few handful of them. So that's why, you know, there are people who collected in the 1980s. There's just a glut of them. They're not worth anything. That's why these older cards are worth a lot more.
Right.
And just so you know, I spent money specifically on the Johnny Berardino card and on the Dode Chris card. This one cost me $60. This one cost me $10. $60 for the Dode Chris.
Nice. $10 for the good value there.
So do you need the budget that we have for the show to cover those costs?
It's on legal. Awesome. You called me cheap at the start, and I want to disprove.
Moving on. We got minutes left.
Scurrilous claim.
Minutes left.
Okay. Great stuff. Love it. Love it. Love it. Right, guys. That pretty much brings it to a close. This is the Johnny and Josh Show. Don't forget, we are on Twitter. We are on YouTube. Look down the bottom. There are all sorts of buttons you can press to say that you enjoyed it. If you want to subscribe, that would be absolutely awesome. We need you to spread the word and bid it up big time. Also, don't forget the Nat Coombs Show at the NC Show, all part of the same stable. We love Nat, of course, the face and voice of Channel 5's NFL and UK coverage. And that is our social media plug. So what have you got to look forward to this week, boys? You got anything exciting happening?
Yeah, giving the trivia answers is exciting.
Oh, yes, there's that to look forward to.
Yeah. You have a few minutes left, guys.
I was going to come to that. Yes. Go on then, far away.
All right, so I asked you earlier, name the player that broke up the most no-hitters with a home run. And I asked you, was it A, Mookie Betts?
Four options.
A, Mookie Betts, B, Ricky Henderson, C, Alfonso Soriano, or D, Ichiro? Johnny Gould.
Okay, I'm going to try. You said think outside the box. You didn't say hit a home run to break up. You said just to break up. So
no,
I'm
I said
hit, assume...
no. He broke up a perfect game or a no hitter with a home run.
Oh, you did say.
I did say that many times.
Oh God. Okay. Well, I mean, I know they hit home runs, but they were better renowned being at the top of the order. Ichiro, Ricky, they were all at the top of the order. Mookie Betts, top of the order. They're more run. They're not so much home run hitters. They're stolen base
God,
boys.
Give me an answer.
So I'm going to go with. So I'm going with the only one that I'm, Soriano. There you go.
Alfonso Soriano. Okay.
So cool that you were so on the cusp of breaking this code. I'm so
Was
pumped
I?
for you. Yes, leadoff hitters, if you hit a home run to lead off a game, you break up a no-hitter, right, Gouldy?
Yes.
So who has the record for most leadoff home runs in the history of baseball? I'll give it to you, Rickey Henderson.
Rookie
So
hits.
Rickey Henderson,
Okay.
every time he hit a leadoff home run, he was breaking up a no-hitter or a perfect game.
Oh, I've just worked out what you mean. You mean even if it's the top of the first? Oh, and then
Exactly. Thinking outside the
Exactly.
box. Lateral
Golden!
thinking.
Golden!
Lateral
And you were so
thinking.
close. It was tantalizingly
What?
close.
No,
I'm like,
you're right. Oh my God.
okay, so I'll tell you what.
Oh my
And how many
God.
times did Rickey Henderson lead off a game with a home run?
It was like 80 something. It was
81
insane.
times.
Yeah.
Is that
Now,
right? Wow.
Mookie Betts did it 52 times, Alfonso Soriano 54 times, and Ichiro 37 times. Now, currently, George Springer has 60, and he's still playing. Don't think he'll get 21 by the end of his career. Well, but you never know. So George Springer is currently ranked second
Is he still
underneath.
playing leadoff? I
No, he
believe he
doesn't
is.
bat lead off anymore.
He doesn't, does he?
I don't think he
Okay,
does.
so
No,
forget
no.
it. Yeah, scratch that. He's not.
Yes.
He'll never get that record.
Okay, guys, well, we've got to wrap it up, unfortunately. Been a pleasure speaking to you both. As always, been a pleasure having the company of all our baseball fanatics out there. We leave you with the dulcet tones of the birthday girl herself, Jane Morgan. Till next time, guys, take care.
A lad, handsome and witty, who whispered to me, "You are so pretty." Soon he and I were cabareting. We had a good time, goes without saying. He came to my house, all the lights were low, and then he held me close, set my heart aglow. He told me that my lips were as sweet as wine. With that, he put his two lips close to mine and talked of baseball, baseball, the Dodgers and baseball, baseball, Stan Musial and baseball, baseball, all through the night, baseball, baseball. I was so mad, I got to thinking, surely this lad will start me drinking, for there was me, eager and healthy, in love with a he. Handsome and wealthy, I tried to get him in my sweet embrace. All he had on his mind was the pen and trace. And though I saw him practically every night, we never went to movies or saw a fight. We just saw baseball, baseball, DiMaggio and baseball, baseball, Chicago Cubs, baseball, baseball, DeRocher and baseball, baseball. My heart knew such humiliation that I sat and planned retaliation, using the wiles known to all women. I'd marry that man if it was human. The wedding bells rang, we were one in June. Triumphantly we went on a honeymoon. He held me very tight under stars so bright and whispered, "Darling, who do you love tonight?" I told him, "Baseball, baseball, the Tigers and baseball, baseball, Ted Williams and baseball, baseball. I love the game, baseball, Yankees, Red Legs, Braves, White Sox, Indians, Phillies, Senators, Red Sox, Orioles, Athletics, Pirates, baseball, baseball, baseball."